नाम नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय नाम नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद्भागवत कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 10 द नेचर ऑफ फ्रूटिव एक्टिविटी Text 30. Word meanings, lokanam, in all the planetary systems, lokapalanam, and for all the planetary leaders such as the demigods, mut of me, bhayam, there is fear, kalpa jivanam, for those who live for a kalpa, or a day of Brahma, brahmanaha, of Lord Brahma, Api, even, bhayam, there is fear. Mattaha, from me. Dviparardha, two parardhas, totaling 311,040,000,000,000 years. Para, supreme, ayushaha, whose duration of life. Lokanam, lokapalanam. Madhyam kalpa jivanam. Brahmanopi bhayam matto. Dviparadha parayushah. Lokanam lokapalanam. Madhyam kalpa jivanam. Brahmanopi bhayam matto. Dviparadha parayushah. Lokanam lokapalanam. Madhyam kalpa jivanam. Brahmanopi bhayam matto. Dviparadha parayusha.
Brahmanopi bhayam matto. Viparagha Parayusha.
Lokanam
Lokapalanam.
Madhayam
Lokajivinam.
Ramanati
Bhayam
Matto.
Viparagha Parayusha.
Translation. In all the planetary systems, from the heavenly to the hellish, and for all the great demigods who live for 1,000 yuga cycles, there is fear of me in my form of time. Even Brahma, who possesses the life, supreme lifespan of 311 trillion 40 billion years, is afraid of me. Report by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. There are many statements throughout Vedic literature proving that even the great demigods fear the time potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even in the heavenly planets, there is no relief from the miseries of material life. No conditioned soul can live eternally, as clearly demonstrated by the deaths of Hiranyakashipu and other demons. Since even the demigods fear the time potency of the Personality of Godhead, one may easily conclude that Krishna is the absolute truth, and that he is eternally the supreme controller of everything and everyone. Lord Krishna is the only real shelter. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurum niditam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Lokanam lokapalanam madbhayam kalpajivinam brahmanopi bhayam matto dviparardha parayushah. In all the planetary systems, from the heavenly to the hellish, and for all of the great demigods who live for 1,000 yuga cycles, there is fear of me in my form of time. Even Brahma, who possesses this supreme lifespan of 311 trillion 40 billion years, is also afraid of me. This whole chapter is called The Nature of Fruitive Activity, and Krishna is preaching to Uddhava about why it's not a good idea to pursue fruitive activity. Actually, in many ways, we use the words fruitive activity and sense gratification in the same way. Anything that's not Krishna conscious, if you're in it for yourself, some material reward, temporary happiness in this world, that's sense gratification, or that's fruitive activity. So as Krishna is saying, as he's making it, basically this chapter kind of repeats the same points over and over again in some ways, to show us why we shouldn't be interested in fruitive activity, pursuing the things of this world. So here he's reiterating a point which he's also already made previously, but he's focusing on it here. The idea that no matter how much you enjoy, there's always death. Last time I gave class, it was about Jaimini's philosophy. And Jaimini was arguing that you can always enjoy in this world. Even if the particular moment of is gone, it's only temporary, and the object of your enjoyment is temporary, you can always get new objects of enjoyment. So you can keep on going, eternally enjoying, just stay in this material world and don't worry about liberation. But Krishna is pointing out here that, well, that you have to face death. Who wants that? No matter how much you try to enjoy here, you have to die. And you may say, well, I'm not afraid of death, but here Krishna is saying, even Brahma, you think you're a tiny insect, even Lord Brahma is afraid of death, which is quite astonishing. Think about how long he lives. Now there's one side where I think, Brahma's afraid of death? It doesn't sound right. He's a great Vaishnava. So maybe he's not exactly afraid of death. Krishna's just making a point here. Even somebody who lives that long is afraid of dying. Death is part of his existence, is part of his experience. And he'll have to face it just like everybody else. So the idea is that we're afraid of it. Even if sometimes we say to, you know, non-devotees, everyone's afraid of death, and they may say, oh, I'm not afraid of death. So you might say that when it's an abstraction, but when it's facing you, someone's got a gun to your head, we'll see if you're afraid of death or not, right? As soon as there's some catastrophe, everybody runs for their life. And nobody thinks, oh, I'm not afraid. I'm just going to stay here. I'll face it bravely. No, it's natural. As long as because we think we are these bodies, we think we're going to be destroyed. This is going to be the end of me. And naturally, we repel against that idea. So we're afraid of death. It's one of the great fears that we have. I looked up and I saw this bhayam. Now this word, of course, bhaya or fear, is one of the four great miseries of material existence. And it's the one that's especially constant. It's always with us. Fear is always there. We can see it, of course, very clearly in the animal kingdom, for example. I have there's this deer that's been coming out. I have a fig tree in back, just outside my window at BTG. And there's a deer that's been coming every morning and evening and checking out. She's waiting for the figs to get ripe. They're not ripe yet. But she's like 15 feet away from me, and I watch her, and then every single sound or movement, her head perks up, and she looks. They're so amazing, this deer. I see them all the time in the back field there. And when I go outside, even they're like 200 yards away from me, a really long ways, they can sense me, the slightest sound or the slightest movement. So then, of course, what is their protection? Their protection is to run, and that's what they do. Other animals have other ways to protect themselves, but the deer especially, they can just run away from it. So that fear is always there. And fear is there in us too, even as human beings. We have different kinds of fear. I looked up on the internet about fear, and I found this article on one psychology website. Actually, the website for Psychology Today. And this psychologist, he made a list of what he considered to be the five fears we all share. He's saying that we all have fear, and they all fit in these five categories. So they seem to make sense to me, so I'll just go through them with you to show. The first one is fear of extinction. So that's fear of death, fear of annihilation, of ceasing to exist. Because we identify with this body, we think, as I said, we think that I'm going to stop existing. That's why we're afraid of death, and we do anything to fight against that. So that's the first one, the fear of extinction. The next one is fear of mutilation. I may not lose my whole body, but I don't want to lose part of it either. Because that's me, and I don't want to lose part of me. So we're afraid of that. We're afraid of our precious bodily structure, he says. And he says, and now one thing is that the reason I looked for this originally, I was looking at fear because I've come across the idea that fear has different subcategories. Like, for example, embarrassment, for example. That's a kind of fear, right? And then anxiety, of course, is fear. We may not call it fear, but anxiety is, of course, fear. So there are different ways you can say this is a fear, but if we use some other word for it. Maybe it's less severe, so we have another word for it. So here he says in this one about mutilation, he says, anxiety about animals such as bugs, spiders, snakes, and other creepy things arises from fear of mutilation. So we're afraid of snakes, according to this person, because we think, well, a snake might bite me and I may have to lose my hand or something or other part of my body. So even if it's not my whole body being destroyed, even if it's a part of it, fear of dogs. I mean, I used to deliver papers when I was a kid, and there was this one dog. He used to chase me up a hill, and I was so scared that I would walk a half a mile out of the way just to stay away from this German shepherd. He was really scary. So fear of mutilation was definitely there with that one. The third one he has here is loss of autonomy. And the way he explains it is fear of being immobilized, paralyzed, restricted, enveloped, overwhelmed, entrapped, imprisoned, smothered, or otherwise controlled by circumstances beyond our control. It is commonly known as claustrophobia, but it also extends to our social interactions and relationships. I can definitely relate to this one, I can tell you. So many people have this, they don't like to be in enclosed places or covered up, or just their movements restricted. Many people are afraid of elevators, they don't like going inside because they think, what if I get stuck in here? I'm going to just freak out. I have to spend hours in this place. So they call that loss of autonomy. In other words, you lose control. That's the idea. When you don't have control, I experienced that myself, even in small ways. It's like sitting in a dentist chair. Now I'm stuck here for a half an hour while the hygienist does her work, and I can't get up now even if I want to. So that fear of autonomy, we don't have control of our own movements. So that's a kind of fear. Fear of separation is his fourth one. And he includes here fear of abandonment, rejection, loss of connectedness, of becoming a non-person, not wanted, respected, or valued by anyone else. The silent treatment, when imposed by a group, can have a devastating psychological effect on its target. So we all want to belong. We want to feel like people love us and we're appreciated and so on. So if we're shunned, like the Amish, I think they have this shunning thing where if you do something wrong, nobody will talk to you. So that's a horrible feeling, not be appreciated in any way. And then the last one he has here is he calls it ego death. The fear of humiliation, shame, or any other mechanism of profound self-disapproval that threatens the loss of integrity of the self. The fear of the shattering of disintegration of one's constructed sense of lovability, capability, and worthiness. So people have to have a certain amount of self-respect, in other words. So if that's threatened, then people are very much afraid of that. I guess embarrassment, he doesn't use the word, but embarrassment is a kind of fear too. Nobody likes to be embarrassed. That's why some people say their greatest fear is public speaking, because they're afraid they'll just freeze up and they won't be able to speak, so they don't want to be embarrassed in that. So that's a kind of, because it's their self-esteem, their sense of self is being attacked. So we have all these different ways that we're fearful all the time, actually. I notice myself sometimes I'll just pause and think, what am I worried about? I feel like I'm worried about something. What am I worrying about? I don't even know what it is. Something. There's always seems to be something, even I don't, can't put my finger on it. Because, of course, human beings, they have more of a sense, you might say, of fear of the future. We can think about what's going to happen tomorrow or next week or next month or next year or whatever. Or the old age is coming, we can worry about that. Whereas animals, it's more immediate kind of thing. So we're blessed with that added anxiety. We can worry about the far future. But Krishna speaks about this fear in quite a few places in Bhagavad Gita. The word fear comes up. Now, of course, an encouraging one is there in the second chapter, text 40. Neha vikramo nasho si pratyavaya navidyate swapamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhaya. So Krishna is speaking about devotional service. And he says, even if you do a little bit of this devotional service, then trayate mahato bhayat, from bhaya, bhayat, you get delivered from that. Trayate, just by a little bit of devotional service. Now this is supposed to be what happens, of course. We become happy in devotional service. I always think, how many of the benefits that we get in Krishna consciousness, or even our happiness, because technically speaking, transcendental happiness really happens in the higher stages, when you get a real taste, ruchi, the stage of ruchi, you have to go through a lot of purification there. So maybe we get some inkling of it in devotional service at certain times, certain little taste of it. But overall, our lives are happy. And it seems to me a major reason for that is because we're practicing devotional service and we find we have some hope. We have some hope that the future is bright. The future is going to be good. We're doing things that are good for us. We're chanting Hare Krishna and we're happy because we know this is pleasing Krishna, this is pleasing Prabhupada, this is pleasing Lord Chaitanya. And that makes me feel good. I feel encouraged. I feel hope in life. And not fearful of death, because even if I don't go back to Godhead, my future will be an improvement. It'll be better than this life. I'll have a better situation in my next life to practice Krishna consciousness. So that's one way, even with a little practice of devotional service, we're delivered from that kind of fear. And of course, we also know, we're told that if you practice Krishna consciousness in this human life, then in your next life you'll get another, your next birth will be a human birth. You won't have to take birth in some of these horrible, actually they're all horrible, other species of life where there's so much suffering going on. So, let's see another, I'm just going to, some of these verses from Bhagavad Gita. I thought this one was interesting. In 1830, let's see what this verse is, 1830. It's not one we hear a lot, but I thought, I found it quite interesting. I'll just read the English, well, let me read the Sanskrit actually. Pravrittim cha nivrittim cha karya karye bhaya bhaye. So here you hear the bhaya, bhaya and abhaya. Bhaya bhaye. Bandham moksham cha ya vaiti buddhi sa partha sattviki. O Sanapritta, that understanding by which one knows what ought to be done and what ought not to be done, what is to be feared and what is not to be feared, what is binding and what is liberating is in the mode of goodness. So there is a what is to be feared and what is not to be feared. This is knowledge in the mode of goodness, to know the difference. Now Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on this verse, he says what should be feared and is not following the Vedic injunctions. Or for us, you might say, not following the rules and regulations, not following Srila Prabhupada's orders. That is what is to be feared. So there's a right way to fear. We can use our fear in that sense in Krishna consciousness. Now there's also, it is said that Prabhupada said that you devotees are not afraid enough. I don't know if it's recorded anywhere. You're not afraid enough of Maya. And now sometimes the point comes up that there's a verse by Prahlad Maharaj, Navod Vijay, is that it? Yeah. So he says, I'm not afraid of material existence because I'm always absorbed in the nectar of your katha. The word here is Udvijay. Udvijay is sometimes translated as, or Udvijay is sometimes translated as anxiety. This is another one. Prabhupada sometimes translates the word bhaya in different ways too. And also, shuchaha, do not fear, and it's 1866, ma shuchaha, do not fear. He translates it differently in the word for word. What does he say there? Worry. He says, do not worry, in the word for word, shuchaha. But in the translation, he says, do not fear. So anyway, Prahlad Maharaj says, I'm not afraid of material existence because I'm always in anxiety. I'm always absorbed in Krishna Katha. So this is often pointed out by devotees. But later, actually, Prahlad Maharaj says, after Nrisimhadev offers him benedictions, after Nrisimha kills Hiranyakashipu, then he offers Prahlad Maharaj benedictions. So then Prahlad Maharaj says, basically, please don't do that. Don't offer me these things. I'm afraid of material existence, so don't tempt me in this way. So he kind of changes his tune there at this point. Now, of course, we can take it that, well, he's instructing us. He's telling us we should be afraid of material existence. It's a good thing to be afraid of material existence. So that fear is a good thing. So material existence, of course, is a scary thing. And we want to be free from that fear. I always think of Prabhupada, of course, he was so fearless. How he came as such an old age and he didn't know what to expect. He didn't have really any understanding of what America was going to be like, and he had no promise of any kind of support. Now in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where there's the list of the qualities of the devotees, of course 16th chapter is divine and demoniac natures. So those of divine nature, the first thing is abhayam sattvas samshuddhi. So abhaya means fearlessness. That's the first one on the list. The divine qualities are fearlessness. Now Srila Prabhupada, when he talks about fearlessness in that verse, one thing about it is Prabhupada divides these qualities up to the different varnas and ashrams. or especially the ashrams, I guess. Yeah, the ashrams. Because he says, this is especially for the sannyasis, he says, fearlessness. Because the sannyasi has to depend 100% on Krishna. Now there are two, in the six items of surrender, two of them have to do with depending on Krishna that way. One is that I have to be convinced, surrender means to be convinced that Krishna will always maintain me. Like a parent always maintains the child. And the other is that I have to be convinced that Krishna will always protect me. So a parent provides those two things, maintenance and protection. So the sannyasi has to have this conviction because he doesn't have a job anymore. He just goes out in the world with nothing, wanders around. So who's going to take care of him? He doesn't know. So he has to have that, he has to be fearless. I'm just going out, I'm going to rely on Krishna. And he even goes into the jungle. I think, well, how scary that. I can't even walk, you know, through the woods. I knew Raman Reti not being scared. What to speak of going into a jungle with poisonous snakes and huge spiders and all these amazing creatures that could kill you, tigers and bears. And we see in Narada Muni when he tells his story, that's one of, he went to experience the world. Narada Muni, just a young boy, and he went walking. He says in deep, dangerous forests, jungles. Deep, dangerous jungles he would go, he went into with all kinds of creatures that could eat you alive. If you've read Shama Sundar's book, he has his opening scene where he's out looking for gold in the Amazon, and all night long there's this jaguar circling him, holding on to his guide he's with, shivering in fear all night long. So it's really scary to be up all night long in a dark, dangerous jungle. So sannyasi has to think, well, Krishna's in the heart of all those creatures, and I'm doing my duty as a sannyasi. The sannyasi is supposed to just travel around everywhere. So Krishna has to protect me. I have to believe that. I have to have the faith that Krishna is going to protect me. So, of course, Krishna is present in his holy name. So I was going to refer to this verse in the verse 14 of the first canto. Apana sansritin gauram yannama vivasho granan tatasa jo vimucheta yad bibeti swayam bhayam. Living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified. So, now Krishna killed so many fearful demons in Vrindavan and also Mathura and Dwarka. He himself personally, but his name has the same power. This is also something we're supposed to be convinced about, that Krishna is fully present in his name. So the name of Krishna is powerful. It is feared by fear personified. It's like the Yamadutas. Yamaraj told them, don't go near those Vaishnavas. So they are afraid now. The Yamadutas are afraid of anybody who chants Hare Krishna because they're going to be punished by Yamaraj, their master, if they bother the Vaishnavas. So as long as we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're protected from the Yamadutas, who are, of course, very fearsome. Just imagine, actually, we hear stories of people with near-death experiences and they see some extremely scary-looking people. So you can imagine somebody with very grotesque features, and they're not described in detail, but we can just imagine how scary they are. And they don't look very, they look very menacing also. They come with their, you know, ropes in hand and ready to take you away to who knows where and abduct you by force. And so it's definitely a scary situation. So what are we going to do when that happens? We better chant. Better remember to chant. That's why we're practicing that in every situation of life. Become free from fear by chanting. So that's, you know, the idea is here that even Brahma can be afraid. Even we who are chanting Hare Krishna regularly, we can also be afraid. But what is our solution? We just call out to Krishna. And we see so many examples, actually, instances where devotees have been protected by calling out to Krishna. Oh, the verse again. In all the planetary systems from the heavenly to the hellish, and for all the great demigods who live for 1,000 yuga cycles, there is fear of me in my form of time. Even Brahma, who possesses the supreme lifespan of 311,040,000,000,000 years, is also afraid of me. So this is considered a long time for a demigod to live, a whole day of Brahma. Usually they don't live that long. To live a whole day of Brahma is a really long time. So just imagine Brahma, how long he lives. Just one of his days is considered a really long time. Usually of many higher beings, they live for the length of one manvantara. There are 14 manus in one day of Brahma. So one, you might, you know, if you live a long time, you might live 1/14th of a day of Brahma. So Brahma lives for such a long time. So that's the idea here. He lives for such a long time, but still, he has to face death. Madan Mohan Prabhu.
While you were talking, I pictured a clock, but instead of having hands, it's got that Grim Reaper sickle or scythe, whatever it is, you know.
Uh-huh.
So as you're talking, and I think Narada Muni also compared time to a spinning razor blade that was slicing away all the things that you're trying to hold on to.
That was,
yeah, the Kala Chakra.
Kala Chakra, yeah. There's a saying, a person's dying, I wasted time, and now time is wasting me.
What's the other one? It says, I'm killing time, and then the other person responds, no, time's killing you.
Yeah. Huh? Nothing else? All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you.